Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck, along with Shad Marquitz. We are taking you through this weekend's edition where we will be focusing big picture on some of the moves post-Fed announcement, as well as just recapping some of the key factors driving mostly the precious metals, but also the markets. And I think we will be diving a little bit more into some of that inflation data as we do wrap up the tail end of this show with Peter Buchvar. That being said, we are kicking off this show with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manages the Euro Pacific Gold Fund. Now, I do need to note that we are recording this on Wednesday, just before the Fed is announcing what we are going to play here as the taper. They have more or less told the market that this is going to be happening. So I did want to add that little addendum that, again, we are chatting before the announcement. But Adrian, let's take this along the path that the Fed is going to taper, and we don't know what the market reaction is going to be right after the taper. We can assume that it's going to be volatility, but the fact of the matter is I think it's going to be more focused, or we should be more focused on what the trend is even heading into this taper, because fact of the matter is I think the market is very much pricing it in. Adrian, in your eyes, when it comes to the precious metals, what is going to be most critical to watch, not just for the actual metals, but also for the stocks as well, please?
Yeah, first of all, may I say thank you for having me once again. I appreciate being on the show. And if it's appropriate for me to say, I didn't listen to all of your guests. I'm sorry, I was making some notes. But I heard you mention Peter Buchvar on later.
He is. He's following you.
Yeah, anyone that checked in to listen to me, I urge you to stick around to listen to Peter Buchvar. He is, I think, the best analyst on the economy, but he's a super, super talker, super, you know, and he really knows his stuff. With regard to gold, yeah, I mean, clearly the market, all markets, the gold market and the other markets, are expecting tapering, and they're expecting $15 billion a month. It's been pretty well telegraphed. The Fed has also made it clear, or Jerome Powell has anyway, that they're not going to start raising interest rates until they finish with the taper. So there's just a couple of things I really want to emphasize on this. And that is that in past incidents of tightening, whether it's tapering or raising interest rates, the Fed's bark has normally been a lot worse than its bite. And we've seen three times now in the past 20 years, with 2005, when Alan Greenspan had, I think it was 17 interest rates in a hike. They were all tiny. And then, of course, in 2013 with the tapering, and then in 2015 with the interest rate hike, we saw in all three of those cases, we saw gold in particular, we saw gold decline for months while these various tightening measures were being discussed by various Fed spokesmen. But as soon as the Fed actually started, certainly in the last two cases, almost to the week that the Fed started, gold bottomed and reversed. And the reason for that is quite clear, that the market realizes in each of the previous two cases, and I think it will realize in this case, that the Fed is lagging inflation. The Fed's actions are, as they say, too little, too late. So if we get $15 billion a month of tapering, I want to emphasize, everybody knows this, but I want to really emphasize, tapering is only reducing the rate of increase. Tapering is not reducing anything. It's reducing the rate of increase only. And so the Fed balance sheet is going to be higher a year from now when they finish their tapering than it is today. And it's really important to emphasize that. And as the market realizes, well, wait a minute, all they're doing is reducing the rate at which they're buying, and they're putting off interest rate hikes until they finish this process, you know, what is inflation going to be when they actually start raising interest rates? So the bottom line, I think, is that the Fed is normally, other than with Paul Volcker, is normally very reluctant to tighten. This Fed is particularly reluctant to tighten for various reasons, not least of which is Jerome Powell still hoping that he can be reappointed. But in addition, and I got this point from Peter Buchbar, I think, a very important point, which is this Fed, Jerome Powell said, we are going to be data-driven. That sounds very rational and reasonable. We're going to look at the data. We're going to make our decisions based on what the data is. But when you think about that a little more deeply, that means the Fed is going to react to the past. And so it's always going to be looking backwards. And therefore, it's, in my opinion, it's going to be lagging inflation all the way up. So when you say, what is it going to do for gold? I think maybe not today when they announce it, maybe not even next month, if next month it is, when they start. But within, before Christmas, I think we will see gold have bottomed and be moving up in a meaningful way. And they did that in 2013, of course, and as I say, did that in 2015.
Yeah, Adrian, you've set the table nicely there. And as you mentioned, the Fed is historically behind the curve. That's where the saying even comes from, just because they tend to be reactionary. And you make a good point about it's really just a decreasing the rate of the increase. They're basically dialing back how much they purchase each month. So my question is, when the market has pretty much priced this in at this point, a tapering starting, but I don't think we've seen what will happen 3, 4, 5 months into this tapering when we find out who's actually going to buy all these bonds that the Fed was buying. Who are the purchaser for these bonds going to be? And if there's any wobbles there in the bond market or the interest rate markets, that could roil things a little bit. And then the second part of that would be, you know, the Fed hiking cycle coming up. As you point out, inflation is on CPI numbers right now is around 5%. But even if it drops down, as some expect next year, to 4% or maybe even 3.5% inflation, we're still in a negative real rate environment, which tends to be good for gold. So how do you see those forces coming together? The reaction to what actually happens when there's nobody there to buy these bonds, possibly, and the moment of truth where they finally get closer to the end of tapering and realize, how are we really going to raise these rates much to get even close to inflation?
Yeah, no, excellent, excellent points. Good discussion. Let's not forget that the Fed also acquired a lot of corporate bonds, junk bond funds, and so on through special purpose vehicles that were kept off balance sheet. Now, I don't think that's what they're talking about when they're talking about tapering, but they're off balance sheet, but there's absolutely no reason why the Fed is still holding, if they are still holding, bonds of Berkshire Hathaway and Daimler-Benz and Apple and so on. They could sell those without affecting interest rates at all. When you come to the treasuries and the mortgage-backed securities, which is the $120 billion a month. I mean, you throw these billions away and pretty soon I get pretty lost with just how much we're talking about. We're talking about treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Well, first of all, there's a lot of the analysis I see is saying they'll cut $15 billion from the treasuries, $5 billion from mortgage-backed securities. Frankly, I think they should be reducing the mortgage-backed securities much more than that. Again, when house builders can't find labor and the costs of lumber and everything else are going up, and when ordinary people can't afford to buy houses, but Blackstone can, BlackRock can, the Fed has absolutely no business juicing the real estate market. So to me, they should be cutting that part of their portfolio much more rapidly than the treasuries. And I think that would be a salutary thing for the market. Now, when you come to the treasuries, I mean, you're absolutely right. If the Fed cuts, if the Fed stops buying or reduces their buying of treasuries, somebody else has to step in and or the yields have to go up. And I think that's part of the reason that we're seeing yields moving up here and in Europe in the last couple of months. Let's face it, a real rational investor, an investor, is not interested in buying ten-year treasuries at 1.5%, and is certainly not interested in buying Greek bonds at negative rates. They demand more, and I'm talking about real investors who intend to buy these, hold them until they mature, and hopefully get a positive rate of return. They want more than those yields. So I think as the Treasury, as the Fed, and as you know, for the last 12 months, the amount of buying that the Fed has done of treasuries has been equal to the total treasury issue. I chose my words carefully because I'm not saying every new treasury was purchased by the Fed, but the amount of purchases, including secondary market, was as of September, was equal to the entire issuance. So the Fed is obviously, the most significant player in the treasury market. If they pull back, even marginally, and they announce they're pulling back, which of course is what they're doing, then the market, someone has to buy those bonds. Foreigners are not buying them at the moment, not the foreign governments. And so rates will have to go up before the Fed starts talking about the Fed funds rate. Rates in the market will have to move up to match that. You're absolutely right.
Adrian, isn't it all about direction of change when it comes to some of these markets? Because as Shad said, look, we're in a negative real rate environment. We've been in a negative real rate environment for a while. However, the argument being that rates are getting maybe a little less negative, and it all depends what data you look at. But if inflation does come down even a little bit and rates do rise just a little bit, we can still be in a negative rate environment, but the direction is heading maybe in the direction that goes against precious metals. How do you balance that out, seeing currently the environment that we're in, but understanding that at least short-term direction that things are moving?
No, absolutely. No, you're absolutely correct. The change in direction is typically a critical factor, and you're absolutely right about the change in direction we're seeing here. Because I'm not expecting inflation to sort of, go to double digits or even high single digits anytime soon. So you're absolutely right. I think if you look at the context of the last, or this year, let's say, for the longest period, people were looking at inflation as not being an issue, even though since last August, the numbers were slowly, the CPI and PPI numbers were slowly inching up, trending up slowly. But the market was still generally looking at inflation as not being an issue because the Fed constantly said, we want to get to 2%. We want higher inflation. We want higher inflation. And let me just do a tangent, if I may, to make an important point. Inflation is not consumer prices going up. Consumer prices going up is a reflection, a symptom of inflation. But inflation is the creation of excess liquidity. So having got that out of the way, just so that people don't say to me, oh, even Adrian Day is talking about consumer prices going up being inflation. I'm just using a shorthand here. So when we got the April numbers in May, April consumer price index numbers in May, which was really when people started talking about inflation, right? For 3-4 months, all we heard from everyone is this is a base effect. This is a supply chain issue. It's all transitory. Nothing to see here, folks. Inflation's not an issue. And the market, I think, for 4 or 5 months generally believed that narrative. It's, obviously there were exceptions, but generally the market, including the gold market, believed that narrative. And so even though you had inflation moving up, initially rates staying where they are, rates slowly moving up, the market was still thinking it was transitory. And it's only been recently, I think, that the market has begun to realize that this transitory is going to be a little more persistent than originally entailed. So I think you're right about the rate of change in direction, of course you are. But I think there's a lot of there's a lot of room here for rates to move up and for inflation to moderate. And I'm not sure how much it's going to moderate, frankly. I think it might moderate in the immediate, in the near term, sort of 3-4 months. But then I think by spring, summer next year, we're going to see moving up again. So that's my own outlook. But I think there's a lot of room for that moderation, that change of direction that you're talking about, because the market has only just started focusing on the fact that rates are negative in real terms here, and that's a positive for gold. So, I think gold is going to, I think the market, once they start tapering, the market will focus on the reality rather than the threats or the, constant warnings from the Fed. And when you focus on the reality, you see, well, wait a minute, they're still adding, tapering means they're still adding to the balance sheet. They're not going to raise interest rates yet, even though inflation is moving up. And I think the market says, wow. That's positive.
Well, Adrian, I was going to mention that, you brought in that inflation is really the creation of money supply, which is actually absolutely spot on. But we have seen the CPI numbers going up, which is the consumer price index. But we've also seen the commodity sector, just another thing, input costs going up, whether it's oil and energy from nat gas, or whether it's the base metals, copper, nickel. Zinc is at a 16-year high. We've seen it across the board, and we've seen it in uranium. And I know that you follow that some of those sectors closely. Some of them, like the uranium space, has actually been ratcheting to what would be beyond just inflation, almost a fervor. What do you make of some of the moves up as a result of inflation, some of these prices in the commodities, and in particular the energy sector recently?
Yeah, okay, let's talk about that. Let's just start by saying you're absolutely right. I mean, when you see raw material prices going up, and when more than the PPI is going up, and when you see the PPI going up more than the consumer prices index is going up, and when you see transportation costs going up, and you also see wage rates beginning to go up, all of those things indicate to me that we're going to see higher consumer prices, over the next 3, 6, 9 months, because all of those input costs are going up. And of course, commodity prices are notoriously volatile. They can change on a dime. But wage rates are not. They're very sticky. When you give an employee a wage rate, you don't go into him next week and say, well, the supply chain is finished and the Fed's tapering, and so we're cutting your wages this week. You don't do that. So wage rates tend to be sticky. And but to get to the commodities, there's one big factor, one big negative factor, or potentially negative risk we have to look at, and that is China's economy slowing. And it's an obvious risk, of course, but I'm not sure it's really priced into the market and the market's expectations at the moment. China, as you know, is about, it varies obviously resource by resource. But it's responsible for about 50% of the purchasing of global commodities across the board. And a significant slowdown in China doesn't have to be a crash. It doesn't, Evergrande doesn't have to be a Lehman Brothers equivalent or anything, but a significant slowdown in China, and particularly a slowdown in the real estate construction business, will have, it has the potential for significant reductions in demand for certain things like steel, aluminum, iron ore, less, and copper, less so, of course, for some other things. So that's a risk that we have to look at. And of course, anytime you look at any market, any sector, any asset, at any given day, there's always various factors, various influences. Some are positive, some are negative. So, of course, it's always a matter of balancing the positives with the negatives. But, I'm bullish generally on the commodity sector. I do favor the commodities, as we've talked about before. I favor the resources where, in addition to a demand story or narrative, there is a real, genuine, I'll use the word shortage of the particular resource, or a difficulty in significantly increasing output supply in the relatively near term. So, because of course, there's hardly ever a genuine shortage of a commodity that's other than regional that lasts any meaningful period of time, because the price adjusts to get rid of a shortage. That's how a free market works, right? And so a metal like copper, that we've talked about before, it's genuinely difficult to boost the supply of copper in any meaningful way in a short period of time. Now, on the other side, I look at uranium, and I'm not a bear on uranium. In fact, you know, I bought some of the Sprott Uranium Trust today for clients. I'm not a bear on uranium over the longer term. You know, the demand for nuclear power is going to have to increase. And, you know, I think we're seeing some of that at this COP26 or whatever it is in Glasgow. We're seeing some of that. But I mean, I think increasingly people realize that if you don't want to burn wood, you know, wood stoves are, a lot of wood stoves are banned in England. If you want to, you don't want wood burning, you don't want coal burning, you don't like oil, and you don't like gas. Well, we've got to get our power from somewhere, and it's not all coming from wind and solar. And of course, we've discussed before that wind and solar actually use more metals than gas-fired power plants. So, you know, the mining is still going on. And we had the news out of China that, you know, China's talking about at least 150 new reactors in the next 15 years, which is more than the world, more than the rest of the world has built in the past 35 years. So I'm not bearish, but I think there's a couple of things we should look at just to temper our enthusiasm. And, you know, one is, of course, the moves to build reactors that don't use uranium. Now, I don't know, I'm not a technical person, I don't know how far away that might be. Are we talking 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? I don't know. But the more important things in the near term are that a lot of the supply restraints are artificial. So in fact, Cameco, the largest producing company in the world, largest, you know, non-government owned producing company in the world, and Kazakhstan, the largest producing country in the world, both artificially pull back on production. What that says to me is that if the price of uranium gets to a certain price and stays there for any period of time, and I don't know whether it, you know, it's $60 a pound for 3 months or whether it's more than that, but there's the potential for one or either of those large producers to reverse course and bring supply back onto the market. So that gives me pause, whereas in the case of copper, you know, copper could go up 50% from here, and the truth is Freeport could not increase their production by 20, 30, 40% in the space of 6 months. They simply could not do it physically. Whereas in the case of uranium, that's not the case. So I'm just a little bit sort of wary. If I see the price move up too high and stay there for too long, and I'm not sure what the twos are, but I would begin to be a little bit cautious of uranium in the near term.
Okay. Adrian, we're going to have to wrap it up here, but always good comments hearing what you're looking for in terms of metals moves and then even diving into the energy sector. As always, Adrian, it's great having you on the show. We'll bring you back on in probably about a month's time. But in the meantime, keep up the good work, Adrian. Have a great rest of your weekend. And please keep us up to date with what you're doing in terms of where you see opportunities in these markets. Thanks again for your time, Adrian. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you so much, both of you. Thank you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Adrian Day. And even as Adrian said on the onset of his interview, we are now very excited to be chatting with Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Advisory Group, also editor of the Book Report. I will include a link to Peter's site in the weekend show posting on our website. That is kereport.com. Now, Peter, we're going to start off with a quick recap of the Fed statement and Jerome Powell's press conference this week. The Fed went through with the taper announcement, and I think you can make the argument that a lot of it was priced in. We didn't see a whole lot of volatility on the back of that announcement, but you know what? The Fed has been talking about this taper for about 4, maybe 6 months now. So as well as it should be priced in, but we did see some kind of interesting moves at the tail end of the week. Before we get into individual sectors, Peter, take us through your assessment, your takeaway from the Fed statement and now the Fed starting its taper process.
Well, as you said, it was well telegraphed by the Fed. Both in terms of the beginning of when they would start tapering and the process on which it will take place in terms of dollar amounts per month and therefore over an 8-month period. But what I think it reminded people of is how dovish they remain, because the Fed's idea of confronting what is a very tight labor market, as evidenced by the jobs report, where the participation rate still remains well below where it was pre-COVID, and inflation in the U.S. that's running north of 5%, the Fed's idea of handling monetary policy in the face of that is to take their balance sheet from $8.5 trillion to $9 trillion, and after they're finished, rates will still be at zero. That's the Fed's strategy right now to deal with the economic situation, which means that they are still kowtowing to the markets. They're still kowtowing to Janet Yellen and the U.S. Treasury as the Fed is monetizing a lot of the debt issuance. And it also proves that Powell is just deathly afraid to negatively impact the economy and the demand side of the economy, because that's what federal monetary policy really only influences, is the demand side. He keeps blaming the supply side as the only reason why we're having this inflation story. But he's been pedal to the metal trying to push the demand side since, you know, early last year when COVID hit. So he's as guilty as anyone when it comes to the current inflation story. But again, to bottom line this, he's reminding all of us that he's going to be very slow. He's going to be behind the curve. And that's going to be repeated by multiple central banks around the world, particularly the Bank of England, who decided not to raise interest rates, even though the market basically put the golf ball on the tee for the Bank of England to hit it. They still decided not to, and for some reason felt it was appropriate to keep a 0.10% bank rate while UK inflation is running 4% plus. So while on one hand we are on the cusp of a global monetary tightening cycle, it's going to be a very glacial process.
Well, Peter, it's interesting because the messaging that Powell gave was, you know, at the beginning of this year was that inflation would be transitory, that much of it would be base effect, year over year issues, or some of it would be these supply chain issues, which everybody can see, like lumber or what happened with used cars because of the computer chips and new cars, et cetera. But there's also a lot of factors that are clearly not just transitory. And he admitted that finally and said, hey, it's sticking around longer than he thought, and it's probably going to push into next year. And so there's obviously the energy markets that are racing higher. Look what's happening with oil. That doesn't seem to be just supply chain issues. It doesn't seem to be just some truckers are not getting it. Look at food costs, which often don't factor into their inflation costs. But a lot of those have nothing to do with base effect or supply. It's just pure inflation, and it's paired with wages. And so with the jobs report today and with, you know, a look at rising wages, rising input costs, that you know, kind of speaks to cost push inflation. Do you think the general markets are going to have a different outlook on inflation now that it's hung around longer? And will that factor into how the bond markets react to this moving forward?
Well, I think right now the markets are very nonchalant about this whole inflation story, particularly the equity market that is up, I think, 16 out of 18 days. Or even 15 out of 17, something like that. Now, earnings for the quarter have been pretty good, but I think that they're not appreciating that inflation and global monetary tightening in response to that is typically not a PE multiple expander, but that's exactly what we're doing here. And to your point about some of the things you pointed out with inflation not being transitory, a lot of this is deeper seated. A lot of this is many years of underinvestment, particularly in energy, where you can just only imagine that you're a CEO of an energy company and you get beaten up every single day by some ESG investor or an environmentalist, and the last thing you want to do is aggressively invest and grow your business. You're trying to you're getting pressure to diversify your business into other things like clean energy. So you're going to see continued lack of investment in energy. I've argued that the whole concept and inventory management of just-in-time that's been a main source of deflationary pressures on the good side for decades is dead, and that companies are going to shift to a just-in-case. They're going to have more stuff on the shelves, which means that they're going to tie up more cash in inventory. That means lower inventory turns, higher working capital needs, less cash flow, and likely higher prices. You look at we can talk about the transportation industry, which is a key part of all these supply disruptions. Well, there's been massive consolidation in the container shipping market over the past 5 years, where 60 to 65% of the market are controlled by five companies. You look at the trucking industry, it's a variety of different things. That's not just a COVID thing. You had 2018, 2019, a tariff-induced fight with China that led to a manufacturing recession. You had over 100 trucking companies go out of business, a lot of capacity therefore taken offline. You have this electronic logging device rule where drivers are only allowed to drive so many hours a day. You've had these enhanced drug testing rules where a lot of truck drivers are failing drug tests. So you add this all up and there are tens of thousands of truck driving jobs that aren't going filled. So this is not something that just comes back. And you mentioned, you know, used vehicles. Well, Manheim this week said that on a seasonally adjusted basis, used car prices in October were up 9.2% month over month. They're up 38% year over year. And on a non-seasonally adjusted basis, this is the first time ever in their survey, which dates back to 1997, that you saw an increase in October. Then we're shifting to housing. And we know that home prices are up 20% year over year in the U.S., and that, of course, is captured within rents within CPI and PCE. Well, Apartment List's national report for November that came out this week showed rents up 16%+ year to date. Well, rents within CPI, they're telling us it's up about 3%. So the rent component is not even close to accurately capturing the reality with rent. Now, I do think it's going to catch up, but that means that for the next couple of quarters, you're going to see some sharp increases
in the rent component of the inflation stats, which is another reason why this is not going to be so temporary.
Okay. So, Peter, I know just even by reading through the articles you've been putting out is that, yes, look, it doesn't look like inflation is going to be transitory or temporary. And there are a number of different factors to point to as to why inflation is going to stick around at these generally higher levels. When it comes to the markets, though, it doesn't seem like investors have that same belief. So my question to you is, what's it going to take for investors to actually start believing that inflation is going to stick around longer? And how does that directly play into the markets or any other sectors?
Well, it'll certainly be another few months of surprise increases in the inflation stats. You even take the bond market reaction after this jobs report, and we're seeing another flattening of the yield curve, which is implying that while long rates are going down, that is counterintuitively because if you think there's higher inflation. But on the other hand, the market is trading on the belief that you get these jobs numbers in the context of this inflation story. Well, the Fed may have to even increase the speed at which they're tapering and gets us closer to eventual rate hikes. Therefore, that's going to slow the economy. Therefore, you should be flattening the curve. So I think that and you can have to fast forward another quarter to see the inflation story continuing with respect to corporate earnings. At least this quarter, some companies have had success in passing it on, and people are comfortable with margins. But if you now start to see an acceleration in wages, and at some point, consumers are not necessarily going to want these to absorb these higher prices, and that's when margins really get squeezed. So I think we're sort of playing a game of chicken here in terms of the equity market and credit markets with this inflation story, with Fed tightening. I mean, when you to with the benefit of hindsight, when you look back to when QE really started in the U.S. in late 08, early 09, which sort of marked the bottom of that bear market, and you fast forward since, markets did great when rates were zero and QE was going, and markets always ran into trouble when rates were going up and QE was either ending or being tapered. And this time around, it is a global monetary tightening that we are on the cusp of. So at some point, we're going to hit a wall. When that is, I don't know. But now that a lot of this tightening is now upon us, I think just people should just be on guard. Now, I mentioned the Bank of England earlier not hiking this week as it was widely expected, but they're going to hike in December instead. Why they waited a month, I don't know. But they're still going to hike. And the ECB, their emergency purchase program, which is still ongoing, even though that emergency is far in the rearview mirror, that will continue, but only for a few more months. So the Bank of Canada, as you guys know, obviously ending QE cold turkey, the Reserve Bank of Australia walking away from yield curve control, and the short-term interest rate in Australia, the market-driven interest rate, the two-year, the three-year, spiked like you've never seen, where the two-year went from 4 basis points in August to 85 basis points as of last week. So we're reaching some real inflection points here that I think many in the markets are sort of just whistling by.
Well, Peter, you bring up an interesting point because it is a global tightening cycle and all central banks have to face this. But do you think there's going to be a point where the general markets realize next year in 2022, as they keep tapering, as they take $15 billion a month out of the quantitative easing, which astonishingly was supposed to be an emergency measure from that 2008-2009 great financial crisis, that we're still, you know, people are still addicted to that monetary heroin, as they say. And as they pull that away and as they pull that bond purchasing away, do you think there's a point where either A, the Fed's going to get stuck where they can't taper any further and they don't get all the way through the program if there's a market tantrum, or B, when they finally get ready to start hiking and in the U.S. and when the Fed finally says, OK, we're going to try to normalize interest rates, is there a point where the emperor's wearing no clothes and when people realize, wow, they're just never really going to be able to get interest rates up even close to where inflation is? could that be a moment where the bond market responds, where the precious metals market responds?
Well, to your first question, which sort of spills into the second, is yes. The Fed and other central banks will reach a fork in the road, and that fork will be driven by inflation that's remaining sticky and persistent, but the markets start to fall, credit spreads start to widen in response to their tightening. So what do they respond to? Are they going to try to save the market because they're worried about the tightening of financial conditions? Or are they going to focus on inflation? We know the market is what the Fed mostly focuses on, but if CPI is still printing 4 or 5%, when they reach that fork, that's going to be a really difficult situation to be in. But I think they're headed in that direction. But because they are most likely not going to be focusing on inflation, that's when you're going to be getting real rates that are going to continue to fall, and that will be bullish for the precious metals.
So, Peter, let's talk about the precious metals then, because it's been a frustrating year for precious metals bulls looking at the inflation data and seeing low interest rates and, unfortunately, seeing the precious metals prices pretty consistently fall and the stocks fall. So, look, there is a disconnect there between the narrative that precious metals bulls have heard over the last over decades now and with what the data is showing. Why has there been such a big disconnect? And it sounds like you're on board with saying that precious metals should go through a nice price appreciation when, I guess, the market and investors wake up to this fact that inflation is going to be around for a while.
I think that after a great 2020 where silver was up 42%, gold was up north of 20, that this year you had a very sharp increase in interest rates in the first quarter. So that helped to slow down that rally. And then as the year progressed, it was either two things. One, the market actually believed Powell in his view that inflation was transitory. So why should I own gold and silver? Because Powell is always right. And when people realize that he's wrong and that it's taper time, well, if the Fed's tapering and tightening, I don't want to own gold and silver. So it was a mid-June FOMC meeting when Powell finally said, yes, we are now talking about when we are going to taper. And if you look at a chart in gold, gold was trading around $1,900 before that and sold off hard, days after that meeting when he talked about it. And now it is finally beginning to recover what it lost in those days after that mid-June FOMC meeting, because people are realizing that tapering is no way to deal with inflation. They're going to go very slow. And even when it's done, as I said, rates are still going to be at zero. People also have to remember that when Janet Yellen first started raising interest rates for the first time in 7 years in December 2015, that marked the exact bottom within a day of that, multi-year gold bear market.
Yeah, Peter, it's interesting that it seems counterintuitive to some, but often when they start hiking while the negative, when the real rates are still negative, it actually can underpin a nice move in the precious metals, just like it did in the 1970s when they were hiking into a negative real rate environment. How do you think the rest of the commodity
sector?
And
the mid-2000s. Okay. And the
Correct.
Mid-2000s. Greenspan took the Fed funds rate from 1 to 5+, and gold doubled in that time frame.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the middle of 2022 when they decide to start hiking here. But how do you think the rest of the commodity cycle, the rest of the commodity sector will respond to this? The base metals have had a nice run. A lot of the agricultural products have had a nice run. Do you think energy, same thing? Do you think we'll keep seeing that in that rate hiking environment, or how will the rest of the commodities fare?
Well, I think at some point things will break when as the deeper we get into this tightening, as they always do. That's just what happened. We have a global economy. We have global markets that are medicated on easy money. And at some point when you start to take away that punch bowl, well, there's an eventual hangover. It's always the case because lunch is not free here. And considering how extreme monetary policy has gone to one end, you know, it may not take much to pull it back to have a response. So while from a supply-demand standpoint, I can argue that commodities are going to go higher, particularly oil and gas prices, where I wouldn't be surprised if you saw $100 WTI and, you know, $7, $8 natural gas. I don't know how they're going to respond if the markets really tank. I'm not sure. Copper, great long-term fundamentals, but I think right now it's trading off what's going on in the Chinese property market and the assumption that construction of residential buildings in China is the main driver of copper, even though we know we are sort of transitioning towards other major uses of copper that will basically take the baton from the Chinese construction industry. So while I think that we're in a commodity bull market that still has time to go, from a trading perspective, I'm just uncertain how it's going to respond as we get deeper into this tightening, monetary tightening.
So Peter, playing this all out and looking actually at the stocks within the sectors, within the metals and commodities sector, it's been interesting because even as, say, copper has been trading close to some all-time highs at some elevated levels, even the oil stocks, they've kind of all lagged the higher metals prices. And even just recently in the precious metals sector, because of higher costs and generally a little bit lower metals prices throughout this year, now even the majors produce some, unfortunately, weak numbers, financial results in Q3. This doesn't draw more investors into those sectors, though. And when we look at it from an investment angle, everyone wants to make money and everyone seems to be making money in sectors outside of commodities. What's going to change that?
Yeah, it's pretty depressing to be watching the party going on from the outside and not having a ticket. And you kind of feel like that owning a bunch of these stocks. I think a lot of that has to do with, well, mining in particular is just a tough business. But I think once people transition to the belief that, you know what, maybe this is not transitory. Maybe oil prices are going to stay high for a while. Maybe gold at 1800, when all in sustainable costs for many of these companies are less than 1000, that's a pretty fat margin. And why am I pricing these companies at either below book or best, you know, 1 or 1.2, 1.3 times NAV, that maybe we should go back to how we used to price these, and that was 2 times. And that's when you get doubles and triples in some of these stocks. But I think people have to believe in the sustainability of that commodity price. And that's just not yet. Again, because we are entering a tightening cycle and people just have this knee-jerk response of, oh, do I want to own gold and silver in that kind of environment? Even though history has shown, yes, you do, because they're tightening in response to inflation. And you know what? Inflation is the most widespread since the 1970s. So this is going to actually be a much different cycle of tightening than we've seen over the past, you know, 10 plus years, coming off zero rates, coming off QE. This is more unusual. And because of this high inflation, it limits the flexibility by a tremendous amount of these central banks. So we talked about reaching that fork in the road. Well, if inflation was low, then they wouldn't hit that fork in the road. They would just go back to just bailing out the stock market. But because of this inflation situation not going away, and because of Main Street actually getting really pissed off about this, the Fed's not going to just be able to easily pivot and back away just to save stocks if that inflation story is still high, if gasoline prices are still high, and so on and so forth.
Well, Peter, just to Corey's point that, you know, that people are making money in a lot of different sectors, we are seeing some pretty big moves in the tech sector again. We're seeing a lot of the markets come back to life and go roaring higher. Almost every month for the last couple of years, we've seen markets make new highs. Valuations are stretched on a historical method, and it doesn't seem to bother people that a stock like Tesla represents a market cap that's larger than the other 14 auto vehicle companies, for example, or that some of these cryptocurrencies are racing to levels that we really are in the unknown spectrums, or that the meme stocks have continued to pile high to new levels that people can't imagine. Look at the move we saw in Avis Carbonyl just this week, for example, where it went up several 100%. Do you think there's a point next year or in the near future where the generalist markets or where some of these hot sectors get their trees shaken, and that we do have a moment of pause where there's a little bit more focus back on valuation again? Or is this a runaway train that just can't be stopped?
Well, valuations don't matter until they do. But when they typically do, it is when earnings growth starts to slow and or you get monetary tightening. And we're, of course, entering that monetary tightening side of it, where I gave the analogy years ago that QE and zero rates puts beer goggles on investors, and it makes everything look good. And it doesn't matter what valuation you will pay, 20 times sales, 30 times sales, who cares? Doesn't matter. But when that tide of money starts to recede, those goggles start to clear up and people start to see things for what they are. And I think that's when investors become more sensitive to high valuations and more discriminating in what they buy. And that people have to keep in mind that you go from a 30 multiple to a 20 with no change in the underlying business or revenues or earnings. Well, that's a 33% decline in the stock, just on a change in the multiple. So I do think, and getting back to my thought that the market's way too nonchalant here with the Fed and this global monetary tightening we're entering, is at some point we will reach a valuation gut check. But certainly with the market, the NASDAQ up 10 days in a row, we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, it really seems like, I guess we're just waiting for the market to wake up to the fact that inflation's sticking around and that the Fed might not have the control to get it under control, but that can last a long time. We've seen this before, right? Is that markets can stay almost irrational for longer than the data tells you that they should be able to. But hey, it was an interesting week having Powell go through and the Fed go through with the taper and seeing some of the market moves being mostly, muted because it was mostly priced in. But for the precious metals bulls, encouraging to see gold at least appreciating the last couple days of trading this week. Peter, great having you on the show. I always enjoy our conversations, and I really appreciate you taking some time to share your thoughts on these markets and make sense of all this data that we really get bombarded with week after week. Again, Peter is the editor of the Book Report, which I will link to in that weekend show posting. Peter, thank you as always for your time. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to this weekend show. Please go back through our website throughout the week and listen to all the daily editorials and all the company updates that we recorded. And please keep in touch, fleck@kereport.com and chat@kereport.com. We love hearing from all of you. Peter, everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.